Hello and welcome to Rome. We are here for the funeral of Pope Benedict XVI. We just visited the body, but not only that, we've got an interview with Bishop Schneider, who himself couldn't be here, but he had some amazing things to say about Pope Benedict, his legacy, as well as his last will and testament, where he said, do not be afraid and do not be confused. We've got our Rome correspondent, Michael Haynes, with us. We're going to talk about the legacy of Pope Benedict and new news about what Archbishop Genswein, who was a secretary to Pope Benedict, said about his broken heart in these last days. We are here right in front of St. Peter's Basilica. Our main life site Rome correspondent Michael Haynes was with me just now as we visited the body of Pope Benedict XVI. We prayed right in front of him lying in state with the queue of thousands and thousands of people who've come to see him over the last couple of days. The viewing of the body is going to end tonight at 7 p.m. Jim Hale just flew in here and just made it so he could join us. And thanks be to God. There's a story behind that, but we're going to have to tell that another time. I want to call in Michael Haynes. Our other Rome correspondent, Louis Canuffi, is also coming in, but he's only arriving tonight. Michael, come on in here. Good to see you. And come on over here a little bit. So tell us, you wrote a beautiful obituary that we published right away at LifeSite News. Give me some of the highlights from that.
The main highlight which struck out to me was Pope Benedict's early desire to become a priest. I mean, that was something which really stuck out from a very, very young age. You know, we're talking as a child, and you see those pictures of him saying Mass as a young priest, something which I think strikes you so much now, particularly today. So I think that was one of the main points, and possibly why we were chatting with someone else today, describing Pope Benedict as a cardinal. He was the priest's cardinal. I think maybe that was why he was admired so much and loved by priests, because he was a priest himself and he committed himself to his priestly life. I think that was something which possibly he took through his sort of ecclesiastical career, if you like, into the CDF here at the Vatican as well.
Beautiful. One of the things he is best known for among pro-life circles is his work that he actually did under John Paul II. As you know, and you wrote about under John Paul II in 2004, the U.S. bishops were having a debate about communion for pro-abortion politicians. And he then, as the head of the CDF, the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith, as Joseph Ratzinger, wrote to the bishops of the United States. Unfortunately, the head of that committee was Cardinal McCarrick at the time, so that's another story. But nonetheless, he wrote them saying that pro-abortion politicians must be denied Holy Communion. Some more details on that.
The letter that he wrote, I think, has sadly become one of the lost pieces of work that is just being buried. I think it was something of a bygone era, such a clarion call, just nice and clear, straightforward. This is the Catholic faith. If you are promoting abortion, which is the murder of the unborn, you cannot receive communion. And that's, I think, something which probably maybe a German characteristic straight down the line from that particular point, which the church needs, this church always needs and still needs, but particularly at that time.
If you want to see that document, by the way, go to LifeSite News and search up Worthiness to Receive Holy Communion. That's the document that Cardinal Ratzinger wrote. Very clear there. He also lays out there something that played out later in his own pontificate about the non-essentials. This refers to, in his letter, Worthiness to Receive Holy Communion, he was making a distinction between things like just war or the death penalty versus things like euthanasia and abortion. He was saying, whereas good Catholics can disagree with one another on the points about having a war or not, or how to deal with the poor or the death penalty even, they can't disagree on things like euthanasia and abortion, which are totally clear. They're essential teachings. And then there are non-essential teachings where Catholics can disagree. That document got buried not only now because it's history from 2004, but it got buried at the time because it was unrevealed by Cardinal McCarrick, who, for no surprise, didn't choose that to reveal that, not even to his brother bishops on the committee dealing with the question. But the major achievement of Pope Benedict in his pontificate is actually something which I asked Bishop Schneider about. Bishop Schneider told me he can't be here for the funeral, unfortunately. He's traveling in Lisbon and so on. But I did ask him this question about what is the major legacy of Pope Benedict. And here's what he said.
With the passing away of Pope Benedict XVI, many Catholics felt that they lost a clear and sure point of reference for their faith. One can have the sensation of orphaned children. We can say that Pope Benedict XVI was a pope who put at the center of his personal life and of the life of the Church the supernatural view of the faith and of the perennial validity of the holy tradition of the Church, which constitutes the source and the pillar of our faith, together with the Holy Scripture. In this sense, the greatest and most beneficial act of his pontificate was the motu proprio Summorum Pontificum, with the full restoration of the traditional Latin liturgy in all its expression. Holy Mass, sacraments, and all the other sacred rites. This pontifical act will go down in history as epoch-making. Pope Benedict XVI states that the traditional rite of the Holy Mass was never abrogated and should remain always in the Church, because what was holy for our forefathers and the saints must be holy for us and for the future generations as well. In a time, as it was after the Second Vatican Council, where there was within the Church an almost general movement of a radical rejection of the millennium-old liturgical rite of the Holy Mass, and therefore a rupture with the principle itself of the tradition, the pontificate of Benedict XVI was worthwhile for the only reason of having issued the motu proprio Summorum Pontificum, with which began the healing of the wound in the body of the Church, the wound which was caused by the attitude of rejection and even hatred of the venerable and millennium-old rule of the prayer of the Church. In his spiritual testament, Pope Benedict XVI left us, among others, the following substantial short phrase, which I consider the most important of all. He wrote, "Stand firm in the faith. Do not be confused." We witness in our day, in the life of the Church, a process of a dilution of the Catholic faith and of adapting it to the spirit of heretics, unbelievers, and apostates by the specious and euphonic name of synodality, and by abusing the canonical institution of a synod. Such a situation is demoralizing for all true Catholics. Therefore, the legacy of Pope Benedict XVI, which is expressed in the words, "Stand firm in the faith, do not be confused," and in his epoch-making motu proprio Summorum Pontificum, remains a light, an encouragement, and a consolation. This Pope was strong in faith, a true lover of the non-perishable beauty and firmness of the traditional rite of the Holy Mass. He gave primacy to prayer, to the supernatural view, and to eternity. These legacy will overcome thanks the intervention of divine providence, which never abandons his church, will overcome the current enormous doctrinal confusion, the creeping apostasy, especially among a worldly and unbelieving caste of theologians who are the new scribes, and among a creeping apostasy of not a few high-ranking clergy who are the new Sadducees. Pope Benedict XVI made shine brightly his episcopal motto, collaboratores veritatis. It is to say, collaborators of the truth. With this motto, he wants to say to each faithful Catholic, to each priest, to each bishop, to each cardinal, and to Pope Francis as well, what really counts is the unshakable fidelity to the Catholic faith, to the constant and venerable liturgical tradition of the Church, and the primacy of God and of eternity. May God accept the prayers and spiritual sufferings which Pope Benedict XVI offered in his retired life, and grant for the future of the Church fully Catholic and fully apostolic bishops and popes. For, as St. Paul said, we cannot do anything against the truth, but only for the truth.
Also wanted to talk about what Bishop Schneider just said also about Benedict's message in his last will and testament about not being afraid and don't be confused. I think that is a huge message for today. And Bishop Schneider there was very clear about the heretics and apostates in the church today. What, if you can define those terms for us, what does it mean to be an apostate?
To reject the Catholic faith, to be brought up in the Catholic faith and to turn your back on that truth, something which we see so widely, and I think something which Bishop Schneider particularly himself is a great clarion example of, teaching us that truth and trying to guide souls back towards the faith, whatever state they're in.
And it's incredible because Bishop Schneider is saying this in the context of bishops and cardinals. That's why this is so stunning. He's actually pointing it out of them. So centrally, he said, the most important thing about, and he says it's an epical change about Benedict's papacy, was the restoration of the traditional Mass. Tell us a little bit about that. What does he mean by restoration of, and he said it was never abrogated, but what does that all mean?
I think that's quite a key point. The traditional Mass was never abrogated. Its enemies have always tried to say that at some point it's been illegal and you're committing a crime by offering the Mass, but that was never the case. But I think what Pope Benedict's Summorum Pontificum really showed was that there was a love for the traditional Mass, and it accentuated that love by allowing people more ready access to it. Not by allowing them, because it was never banned, but just by allowing readier access to it. I think he opened to the wider church a treasure which had until then been locked away in little cubby holes in churches at 7 p.m. of the evening every second Sunday or something, and really opened up to so many families. I mean, the thing about the traditional movement is it's populated by young families. I think greatly benefited by Summorum Pontificum, they were able to find the Mass within a much easier sort of drive towards their house. And that has really brought so many graces to the church, brought so many young families, brought so many young vocations. I think something we're going to see perhaps tomorrow is the amount of young priests who are going to be here and who attribute their vocation to Pope Benedict. Many of the traditional communities, like say the Fraternity of St. Peter or the Institute of Christ the King, booming in vocations, particularly since Summorum Pontificum, because these young men have come in contact with the Mass, which they otherwise wouldn't have come in contact with. And that has just been untold blessings to the church.
So we're in a very strange situation now, because you had this seemingly restoration of the traditional Mass and sacraments, as Bishop Schneider just said, he very much stressed and sacraments. And yet now, with this new document of Pope Francis, Traditionis Custodis, what does it exactly do to restrict the Mass and the traditional sacraments?
It's a hammer blow to the traditional Mass. There have been many astute arguments made about its actual legality, but in terms of its practical effect, it really tries to cut Pope Benedict's Summorum Pontificum, severely restricts the availability of the Latin Mass around the world. However much it's implemented, that's down to each particular bishop, but then you also get the sense that Rome is putting pressure on bishops as more and more bishops around the world gradually impose restrictions on the parishes which are thriving. Often it is the Latin Mass parishes in their diocese which are the youngest, the more full of families, they're more free with their donations because they realize the need to support the church. They are the lifeblood, but the implementation of Traditionis Custodis is very heavily restricting that. It's prohibiting new priests from having ready access to permission to say the Latin Mass. It's then with Cardinal Roach's extra response ad jubium just a few months later, that was then restricting further the access to the traditional sacraments.
And that one is really hellish for parents, for traditional parents who found out about the traditional sacraments. Like, for instance, just to take a very small example, the traditional rite of baptism has four exorcisms as part of it. The Novus Ordo rite of baptism, which I was baptized in and all my kids because we knew no better, has no exorcisms whatsoever. It makes you wonder if you shouldn't redo it again. So, I mean, terrible stuff, and yet done in the face of Pope Benedict while he was still living. And this was so interesting. So what just broke the other day was an interview with Archbishop Genswein, who we all know was a secretary to Benedict and in the beginning even to Francis as well, went back and forth between the two popes. And he just revealed in a new interview that the Traditionis Custodis from Pope Francis really broke his heart. In Germany, he says, it made my heart sick. In our English translation would be, it broke my heart. And really, people wonder, was this the blow dealt to Pope Benedict that really put him under? Because a broken heart we've seen already from so many leaders in the church. In fact, the two Dubia cardinals who died, they too died of broken hearts because of the response they got from the Pope betraying the faith. So from Pope Francis, that is, betraying the faith. So unbelievable stuff. Do you have any comment for us on that, on the passing of the Holy Father and your thoughts for the future of the church?
I think, as you mentioned, that his legacy, Pope Benedict's legacy, is, I think for many people, Summorum Pontificum, the Latin Mass, which I think makes the pain of Traditionis even more bitter for him when he was there, you know, hundreds of meters away behind Pope Francis in the Vatican Gardens there, and to have that attack on the Mass going on. The church will always have this treasure of the Latin Mass, and it will continue to grow. We can call on, you know, the example of Pope Benedict in trying to promote the Latin Mass as he did, trying to give it to the next generation, to our families, to our friends, our loved ones, and basically to try and promote that treasure of the Latin Mass. That, I think, will be his main legacy.
It is incredible to think that the main work, the main legacy of the Holy Father, of Pope Benedict, is trying to be stomped out, if you will. And we know originally Pope Benedict probably had a role in the suppression of the Latin Mass itself, but he's obviously turned around and did what no one has done since the 1960s in bringing back the Latin Mass and saying it was never abrogated, which is all by itself huge. But I think from that testimony from Bishop Schneider, we know this is the great legacy. It's a legacy, as Bishop Schneider said, we have to take courage and not be confused. For LifeSite News, this is John Henry Weston and Michael Haynes behind the camera, Jim Hale. God bless you all, and we'll see you tomorrow for the funeral of Benedict XVI.